Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. Welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and the podcast about rugby that is there for you 52 weeks of the year. Come rain, come shine, whether there's rugby on or not, and we've been doing that for, well, we're into our 11th season now. We didn't actually mark the 10th anniversary.
No, we didn't.
But here we are again. JB, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'll get onto your feet situation in a minute because it's quite topical. And Phil, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Tim.
Good. JB is shoeless, sockless, naked feet,
yep.
Only fans ready. Do you think Joe Marler listens to the podcast?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yes, he's done something which I should have done years ago, really. Set up an OnlyFans.
He set up a foot fetish OnlyFans thing. I think he might have listened to the podcast, our jokes, and realised it's... because the whole joke started because of old YouTube videos where some of our top commenters were talking about JB's feet.
Well, this is actually... Well, how can I be delicate about this? There is a man, and I understand him to be a very nice man, but he does have a fetish for feet. And the story goes that...
Well, how is former New York Jets head coach Rex Ryan, by the
yeah,
way?
Yeah, quite. Well, the story is he does actually message the England team when they're in camp asking for socks. And they say he's a perfectly normal bloke, but he just wants these socks.
Sure. We'll just get them out the laundry. No, don't wash them.
Absolutely not. Such a weird thing to be into. You know, who am I to judge?
Yeah, exactly. Everyone has their little intricacies.
Pro rugby players do have pretty rough feet, in my experience. My brother's feet, like the number of like nails that have fallen off, gone black.
Oh, nothing worse than standing on your toes.
Yeah.
Nothing worse.
I think he's stood on a few feet.
Right, yeah.
And fingers, probably. So, yeah, anyway, we've got lots to talk about on this podcast.
Hey, I'm off to Dubai to watch the Sevens
yes,
this week.
I was going to say, when are you going?
Tuesday night. Can I tell you about my drama, which has occurred tonight? Well, actually, it's been unfolding very slowly, like a slow-motion car crash. And at every stage, I've had loads of time to unwind this drama, but I just haven't got around to doing it. And today, it might have got unmanageable.
Uh-oh.
So, I cannot find my wallet anywhere. Do you guys ever use your wallets or just use your phone?
Jay, I'm so surprised that you losing an important piece of personal possession.
I've not seen it for about 4 weeks, but I've not needed it for...
Inches away...
I thought you just whipped out my wallet then. I was gonna
not your wallet. Sorry, no. Inches away from your beautiful, filthy feet.
So the soles of the filthy. Do you take your wallet out with you everywhere, Phil?
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you?
Yeah, I don't actually have my cards registered to my phone.
I have one card registered to my phone, and that's because I went to France, and when I was in the World Cup in France, I thought I better have a backup because I'm in another country. But other than that, otherwise, I don't like having my cards on my phone.
So I have two cards on my phone, and I've got three separate cards for various things, like podcast or whatever it is, right? So I've got a wallet somewhere, but I never need it because I never need those cards. So I just leave it and it's got my ID in it and I just haven't seen it. And when you're not seeing something for a long time and you just can't get... I know it's in here because I've checked all my statements and nobody's using these cards. So it's not like someone's living the good life. And I just can't find it. But I'm going to Dubai.
In two days?
Yeah. And I'm thinking like, I'm pretty sure that Google Pay works out there, but I'm not entirely certain. Anyway, last night...
But it's also... It's not... entirely unpredictable for you to lose your phone, say, one day or 6 hours into a multiple day booze?
Yeah, so I am. I mean, that's when my last phone went missing.
It's almost certainly going to happen in Dubai again. Okay. Yeah, so, in fact, have you thought about just buying another one and taking it with you in your suitcase?
Are you mad? This is my spare phone. This is exactly what it does. This is literally what it does. It replaces all my other phones when I drop them in the bilge of a boat or, you know, whatever happens. So I'm thinking last night as I go to bed, I really need to find this wallet. And as I'm drifting off, would you believe it? I just have a thought. Oh my God, it's in this special place. So run downstairs, open up the drawer where it should be. Now, the wallet isn't there, but a single bank card is there, and it's the bank card that I need. I was like, yes, get in. That's fine. So I've got my emergency bank card now, and I've got my phone. Good to go. Nothing can go wrong. Today, I put a peppermill into the cupboard, open up the cupboard, the peppermill falls out and smashes my phone to pieces, which is why I have my spare phone, which has no camera on it, no camera function on it, no NFC payment on it. So now I've got one solitary bank card, no credit cards, no phone.
Oh, living on the edge. I love the
No camera is definitely a good thing going to Dubai.
Yes. that's undeniable.
But he's not going to be able to prove that he had a chat with Stephen Donald or whoever he chatted with last year.
Yeah, Stephen Donald, yeah. Stephen Donald, Casey Luawa.
Leiluai.
Leiluai. Leiluai.
No. That's another guy. It's a different guy. Lau. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Laulani.
Yeah, could be. Oh, what's his name? Good lad from Worcester, if he listens to the podcast. Kerry Sweeney was there. Marcel Garvey was there playing. Yeah, there's loads of people.
Are you doing the CrossFit thing this time?
I'm not. I don't even know. So here's another hilarious mishap from me. I've booked it a day early. So we're leaving before the last day. So this year in the Sevens, they've moved it all back. No, they've moved it all back a day because there's meant to be a national holiday for the UAE, Martyrs Day or some such thing. So they've moved it all. So it's now Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whereas before Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Are you playing this time or just travelling?
Just watching. Just watching and reporting.
Watching and reporting.
But, yeah. But unfortunately, we're missing the last day because we fly out on the last day because they moved back. And I didn't
check. Who's we?
Me, friend of the show, Dave. Friend of the show,
Dave Mack.
Yeah,
Dave Mack. Big Ollie.
D-Mac's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jealous?
I'm very jealous.
I am jealous. I'm sad I can't go.
It's going to be good fun.
How did he swing that?
We decided this during the...
No, I know, but I was I was meant to be last weekend in La Rochelle with this guy, and he was out. I saw him multiple times during the World Cup in France. He's just got an unbelievable missus. She's a proper keeper.
He's got
small kids.
Three or four. Yeah, four kids.
Four of them.
Fair play, D-Mac.
So, yep. That'll be my Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh,
so,
that's going to be exceptional.
But of course, back for Sunday to record the pod because I'm a professional.
Of course.
Yes.
So, when we went to Lisbon last year, which patron listeners might know, we might be going again to Lisbon next year, but no one else will know. Anyway, when we went to Lisbon last year, it was just you and me, Jay.
It was.
And what was it? We landed, we got to the hotel about 5:30 in the evening. Great time to arrive in Lisbon. 5:30 in the evening on Friday night.
Sundowners.
Yeah. So now we had a glass of wine in the hotel and then we're out.
Get me to altitude.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's exactly what we did.
We found a few different bars at altitude. And the gradient, as soon as you go away from the sea, it gets pretty steep, pretty hilly pretty quickly. Anyway, by... What time was it? 8:30? 9:00? You'd already lost your wallet.
So, I tell you where I was. We were in some pink nightclub-y bar thing.
Yeah.
And I remember the guy, and I'm almost certain that he was the one that pickpocketed me.
What it meant was for the next two nights, or that night and the full day and night after, and the day after that, it was me just buying all the drinks, putting them on my card, and then we split the bill afterwards. So either D-Mac or Ollie got to look forward to that.
Unlucky.
At some point.
Unlucky.
Well, I'm staying with my dear friend Kenny.
So
should be right.
Perfect.
Anyway,
Kenny, whose wedding I crashed South Africa.
Vaguely related to rugby. There is a rugby sevens tournament going on there.
It is the rugby sevens tournament.
Well, more and more is getting... Because the financial pickle rugby's in, more and more rugby is going to be taken out to that part of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, and maybe one of the nice little offshoots of the financial woes of the game, yet the undeniable commercial attractiveness of it to certain people, is that we're going to have entrepreneurs who set up events like Dubai Sevens, like Bournemouth Sevens. I mean, these Sevens festivals are as popular as they have ever been. And the element of it which people love is the festival element. So I can see
it. Wasn't it the World Sevens event in New Zealand a few years ago they made dry?
Yeah, cheers, lads.
And nobody turned up.
Weird, that, isn't it?
Funnily enough,
this is why
the Sevens isn't, the rugby's not the main event.
Well, this is why we need to take as many things off the administrators as we can. We don't want administrators administrating the game. Simple as that. Maybe we can hire them in to literally fill in tables. And that's it.
But they just tick boxes.
Yeah. They should have no say in what's going on. Look at the mess that Australia find themselves in. Look at the mess the RFU find themselves in.
Well, the Australia mess, I was reading about this. There is a potential 7-figure loss for Australia because they didn't fill out a form. So... And this is, you could argue, I don't know if, I think Phil Waugh is having to deal with this one. I don't know if he was in charge when it happened, but it wouldn't surprise me because Phil Waugh, I was surprised when he became CEO of Australia. Great bloke, brilliant rugby player. Mm. Not a lot of experience about running a giant organisation.
No, but this is the thing, Tim, right? You can't get mixed up in this.
Yeah, okay. So let's move aside from the Phil Waugh thing. What Australia did is that they said to Bernard Laporte at the time it was, and if there's one person you're dealing with where you want to get something in writing, it would be Bernard Laporte.
Who's
currently on a suspended prison sentence.
You either want everything in writing or nothing in writing, so there is no evidence of your transactions with Bernard Laporte.
Bernard Laporte says, do you want a 6-figure sum to go missing? That could mean various things. Yeah.
So Bernard Laporte says, you come and play us in France and we will give you 1.7 million Australian dollars. Australia didn't get a contract signed and are now out of pocket 1.7 million Australian dollars.
Oh, and Laporte, what's he doing? Has he bought another villa?
Yeah. Oh, he's on a suspended prison sentence.
I'd rather him running the RFU, though. I still have him running
probably,
the
RFU. Yeah, probably.
Well, on that, before we get into the actual game elements, and there's lots of good stuff to talk about there, that there's more... chat about this. Is it PRG or PG? The player game agreement. PGA.
Yeah. Professional game agreement. Isn't
professional
it?
Game agreement. That's right. And the championship clubs have said no, not interested in what you're. And now everyone's getting a little bit tense because it looked Barron. What's it? Francis Barron.
Yeah.
Who actually, when you look back at rugby now...
The golden years.
You sort of think, give me Francis Barron back. He knew what was doing. He knew what was going on. And Francis Barron, I was reading the rugby paper earlier, Francis Barron has said, under no circumstances should the RFU Council allow the RFU to sign off what they're planning to sign off. It will be a disaster.
Yeah, so you're not wrong about Francis Barron. You look at his tenure and you think, yeah, to be fair, wasn't that bad, was it? And for all the criticism of the old farts in blazers or, you know, white guys in blazers, it's a damn sight better than the professionalisation of sport. And I don't know what the answer is, because on the one hand, you can't have a bunch of amateurs running a organisation this big, but you also can't have a bunch of employees. Someone has to own it. I mean that. The way forward is somebody actually has to own the RFU. In the same way, someone has to own the rugby clubs.
Elon's South African. He likes his rugby, doesn't he?
I mean, that'd be ideal, wouldn't it? That'd be ideal. But you look at the NFL model. The commissioner works at the behest of the owners. He's not there for the benefit of the sport.
Yep.
He's not there to grow the game. He's not there to build women's teams or wave rainbow flags. He's not there to do any of those things. He's there just to execute the will of the owners.
So in other words, he's there to deliver good dividends for the owners and their business
associates. Yeah, he's not like Bill Beaumont, who's like, oh yeah, we'll make a sustainable World Cup. Will you, Bill? What, when you're flying teams from all around the world, you know, you need an owner. I strongly believe this now.
So this looks like it's going to rumble on the RFU, I think, and now a little bit rabbit in the headlights, like, oh, the championship haven't just agreed to what we're saying. What do we do now? Because we wanted the Premiership 2 thing. And so this thing's going forward, but that there are stakeholders that aren't there. And one of Francis Barron's things that he suggested was there should be a absolute hard line in terms of how the funding is distributed that the RFU have, and he suggested a 35-15-50, 35% to the English national team, to the Premiership, 15% to the Championship, and 50% to the community game. He said that would be his just as a hard and fast rule, 35, 15, 50, I think is what he said.
So the first thing which comes to mind is it's lovely to have money for your rugby club. It is. Mm-hmm. But it does breed complacency and it breeds a dependency culture. And I think we are really guilty of that in the UK. And
But when he says grassroots in the community game, that could be development officers. That could be infrastructure.
That's the problem, right? So the development officers were great, but simultaneously... I mean, if you had a development officer now, Tim, if you had two of them and they ran all your sessions, there's a good chance that you wouldn't be involved and that your three fellow coaches wouldn't be involved. The reason your team works really well is because you've got four committed parents that really care, and you can't replace that with a development officer. And I know it sounds awful to the guys that did a really good job, or... You know, they certainly tried their hardest. I'm not saying that, but it is a dependency culture.
But what I would want for the under 16 team that I'm involved in is I would want a funnel from the schools where rugby's not played and the areas where the talent that there is in areas that don't know about it. we're in South Manchester. We're in inner city Manchester. There's tons of kids that I'd love to.
Yeah, I bet there is. But again, this is the problem.
We want that funnel.
Yeah, but the problem with the funnel, right? And sorry, I'm going to go back over all ground. But this is about the dishonesty of the RFU. So when I talk about the dishonesty, they won't tell the kids the truth and they won't bring in the full version of rugby to a school. So if you're a young man in a school who's never experienced rugby, they're not going to tell you how hard it is or how hard you need to hit or how hard you need to train. They'll give you some weak, sort of pale impression of rugby, like hits or touch or limited contact, and nobody likes it and nobody wants to play it. And they go, well, I'd just rather play football, thanks. Because it's very hard to get schools to play. Schools are exactly the same as you guys. Like, most schools in the state sector where they take it really seriously are done because of incredibly committed teachers who just love the game and they want to have a school team there. You know, maybe they've got a history of playing, and that's part of the history of the school, and that's important to their identity. But I think it's going to be a real stretch and a real, real effort to make schools that don't play all of a sudden play without that committed member of staff.
Well, on the off-field stuff, just to kind of wrap that up before we get into the actual rugby, it's not going to help when there was an article in the Times today.
David Walsh. So I've not actually read... I have read this, but because of my phone situation, I've not managed to get my notes. But we'll deal with David Walsh substantially another time.
Yeah, but the headline was, thousands of children a year get head injuries on rugby field.
What a clown.
And he paints, which is the issue with this, paints a very, very one-sided issue. Yes, rugby's... Right,
dangerous.
Newsflash, rugby's dangerous. Newsflash, people get injured when they play rugby. But what is not mentioned in this article and never seems to get mentioned is the counterfactuals, which is, as everything in life, it's a trade-off. Yes, you might get injured playing rugby, but you will get so much positive, incredible stuff that never gets mentioned in articles like this.
I don't know. Has he mentioned like how dangerous it is having disillusioned young men on your street? As he mentioned, you know, how dangerous it is that...
Pent-up aggression, having no outlet.
Has he mentioned that? Any of that? No, he hasn't, because, well, I mean, there's lots of things that I'd go into, but he just hasn't.
Kids sat in front of their computer all day, getting out in the fresh air, having fitness, being in groups of actual people, being in an inclusive rugby club place where they might speak to the Alakadoos that are of a generation above them and people from all backgrounds. No, none of that mentioned. So well done, Sunday Times again. Nice one.
Well, he's just not a real journalist. That's what I'd say.
A chief sports writer.
Not a journalist.
Anyway. That's all the off-field stuff. Loads of good stuff.
One other off-field, which JB and I were touching on yesterday on WhatsApp, Northampton's accounts.
Yes.
Northampton Saints. So we mentioned briefly Leicester's last week, which was about 1.5 million loss. Northampton's 1.1 million loss before tax ended up being, I think it's 467k loss with the tax corrections rebate situation. Which is down from, they made a very small profit the year before, but only because of really accountancy quirks.
Wasn't it an insurance payment of some description?
There was insurance and they were still amortising the, if that's the right term to use in this situation, perhaps not, the CVC payment. Because they did it over 5 years.
That's okay.
So that meant they had a small profit last year, small loss this year, Sorry, 1.1 down to 400k loss this year.
I don't know how it looks on a balance sheet, because I know that I don't think you would get it counted as a profit, but you would have assets are on a balance sheet when you look.
Balance would be on the balance sheet, yeah.
So, but it wouldn't be in. It wouldn't. It wouldn't discount from this number. But what Northampton Saints have, if you go to Franklin's Gardens, or Franklin's Gardens from these days.
Has it got a name? Is it?
Yeah. But what you will see at St Franklin's Gardens is the indoor training centre right outside the stadium, which is what they used some of their COVID money on.
So they did say that was in their reference that. So obviously you have your balance sheet, which is your assets and liabilities, and then your profit and loss statement, which is exactly what you think it is. It's the profit and loss in the given period.
Yeah.
The balance sheet being a snapshot at the end of that financial year. Cash in Northampton has gone down significantly in the year, from I think it was more than 6 million to about 2.5 million. And they specifically reference the construction of that training facility, which evidently they have ploughed cash into, at least some of it, rather than expensive long-term loans, which that is a good thing, and that will pay dividends long-term.
Both in terms of players, and I'm sure it'll be a resource that they can
use for other things.
They can monetize, yeah.
Well, I think that's the interesting story on this one. So season ticket holders went down. Rugby revenues went down, not least because they had three fewer home games last year.
Yeah.
Their hospitality events, conferencing, the external rugby or the outside of rugby stuff actually grew by 21% there, outside of rugby revenues. Now that is a good thing for the club. Obviously the rugby revenues going down is bad, but any club who is astute enough and has the foresight to be able to increase their non-rugby revenues are doing the right thing, because they might all be relying on non-rugby revenues a bit more going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you say they're doing the right things, but then you're getting into what I call the gold ring dilemma.
Well,
so the gold ring dilemma is, when you build a load of tangential businesses to support your warm, non-profitable business, and Colin Goldring shows up, he's going to go, yeah, I'll keep that, and that. Love the car park, by the way. Hate the rugby club. Get rid of that.
Yeah.
Which and is only a logical thing to do.
Northampton Saints, but this, yeah, do have a very nice car park. It's giant, and it's exactly where you can imagine loads of industrial units being.
I mean, when you're erecting hotels and conferencing facilities and all the other things just to keep 15 men on a field playing with a ball, you've got a problem. Your core product should be profitable, which is the rugby club. And I say that, I mean, yeah, it should be. And maybe the branding of the rugby club then draws everyone in around it, because they need to stay at the hotels and so on and so forth. So maybe it's not quite as simple as I'm making out, but you see the point I'm making.
Yeah, the point is a good one, because you're exactly right. You are relying on the owners of the club, whether it's public or private, but you're relying on the owners of the club to prioritise rugby above all else.
Yeah.
I.e., if you've got the rugby club being loss-making and all these other businesses being profit-making, you have to love the rugby, otherwise you just switch it off and then you make more money, which is exactly the gold ring scenario. Now, Wasps tried this as well, so their purchase of the Ricoh Arena was a profitable business in its own right. They were hoping that could be profitable enough to sustain not only the rugby, but also the enormous debt that they took on in order to buy the Ricoh Arena
they
itself.
Had no assets, did they? They had they had nothing. They took a £17 million bond.
Enormous bond. And then
spent it all on rugby players.
Yeah,
and
they also bought the ground itself, which was profit making, but not profit making enough to sustain a £10 million rugby business losing money, and then the debt on buying a £30 million asset.
£17 million does buy you a few good years.
It does.
Danny Cipriani, Charles Pietau, Curly Beale. I mean, these are just some of the names.
We might have only played one or two games with them. Vincent Cock.
I don't think he played a single game.
Maybe one.
Yeah,
Vili LaRue.
Good shot. Double World Cup winner, Vili LaRue. Although he's
Cal Eastman rings. There's all sorts of great players that went through there. But yeah, again, same sort of thing. The rugby was not profitable enough.
Yeah.
Trying to buy all these other things just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, we've mentioned it before, and it's one to keep an eye on, but they're in the early stages of talking to Sevenoaks Council about having a Wasps side in Kent there later.
How do you possibly support Wasps? Like, how, if you've really invested into Wasps as your team, how do you then go, oh, cool, we're going to Kent? I mean, that's a really difficult place to get to from Coventry. You don't get to Coventry and think, I'm nearly in Kent.
Depends. Kent's pretty big as well. Depends where in Kent.
I mean, Kent is a good place for Seven a Oaks. Club. There's no two ways about that. But
What Kent probably needs, I think my geography's right on this one, what Kent probably needs is Blackheath to the club. Because I know they're not Kent, but they're southeast London, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So down towards there.
They're like Greenwich Way, aren't they?
Well, maybe it's not quite south enough.
Wasps might not be
ground, and play at just different venues every single week. They just book them out in advance. Like, 1 week it's Old Trafford,
Harlem Globetrotters.
but Tottenham Stadium. Games. You know, just make it into a feature. It isn't a bug; it's a feature. We have no home. And you don't know where you're going to be
like
playing.
It's like a tour of the Wasps tour.
Yeah.
The fixture list gets announced and then they work out the
locations. Then everyone gets excited because they're playing Wasps and this week we're going to be playing...
Do you know what? They'd probably get better attendances than having one fixed home.
Well, yeah, because...
They went like, go to... Like, actually, all we need to do is get the people of Bournemouth to come to one game.
One game a year.
Yeah. And we're going to be playing Leicester Tigers. And then Leicester Tigers like, well, this is awesome. We're going to take all of our friends down to seaside.
East Anglia. And they can sort of dip there. As much as anything, you can dip your toe in the water and see which one. Oh, yeah, I think it might be worth
coming back
here.
Wasps are returning to East Anglia after last year's amazing game. You know, look, nothing else is working. Give it a go.
But that whole kind of the positive side of the Northampton there, that they're growing their alternative businesses, which for now is a positive because they are very much invested in the rugby. That is one of the reasons why I'm still nervous about potentially more teams going. Mm. And I know the Temple of Fun is a very well-run place, but Sale don't own it.
They're going to lose a lot of money this year.
Their ability to generate additional income is enormously curtailed by the fact that they don't own their own ground.
Yeah, it is a real problem. Just back to Northampton, I think they're probably the gold standard in terms of how you run a club. There's not many which are more professionally run. So it's worrying that even they are not making
it. I have noticed, to fill the void with some of the fixtures that you mentioned, that Premiership sides are without three home fixtures they don't have this year. You'll notice that a lot of clubs, I think I saw Exeter were the latest to do it, they're playing a Welsh team on the day. I mean, it's smart thinking. It's it goes contrary to the player welfare, play less thing. Let's just get more games. But I understand it because they've got money that they've got.
And they are playing fewer games than they have however many years, 20 years.
And English clubs are probably not going to get that far in Europe. So, you know, there's that as well. But they're playing during the Six Nations on the day of the England-Wales game. One of the Welsh sides, I forget which one. And so it'll be Exeter v whichever Welsh team it is, which is quite cool.
Yeah,
and then at the stadium,
as the prelude to the game,
and watch England v
and
Wales.
Then you can sell all those extra pints during the main
which
game.
Is a neat idea.
That is a good idea. Yeah,
various things you can look at. So, like, depends how interwoven with the community you are. As we know, Exeter is a wonderful club, and is very interwoven with the community. But they have weird games there, like the Argyle Cup. You know what that is, right? So this is
Plymouth
Argyle Cup is the four branches of the Marines. It's like the training corps. We can't remember what the branches of the Marines are.
I'm interested.
Like. And then they play each other, but they play each other every single day. So there's no let off. So they play, I think 3 days running or four. I don't know. So the group stage, and then there's like a final. If I remember this correctly. Now you can fill that with a good few thousand Marines, and if that's on the weekend of England Wales or whenever you need to play it, you can make that into a real feature. And there are various games and tournaments around the country which you could get involved with. You just need to work out how you do it, what's important to who. Even like the university games are really, really important. You know, you're involved with university rugby now. You've played varsity rugby, Phil. And these games get a real attendance.
Varsity, not Oxford Cambridge Varsity, slightly different.
So I'm involved with the Manchester Metropolitan University. They're we don't need to go into the ins and outs, but their game against the University of Manchester, the big match, was was played behind closed doors last year.
Well, I went to an MMU Uni Of game. These are the days when MMU used to get absolutely battered by Uni Of. So it might be 10 years ago now. And it was at Haywood Road. It was wild. Absolutely wild. Flares going off, naked students everywhere. It was awesome. It was really... Because, don't get... I mean, it's a few bits of shouty behaviour, a few bits of nakedness.
One of my favourite memories from a varsity game was... it was Exeter University and Peter Phillips, grandson of...
Yep.
The Queen, R.I.P., Princess Anne's eldest. Anyway, he was like a couple of years above. And he was in the stands. I can't remember who we were playing, but it was Exeter v someone. Anyway, the opposition fans started a chant, "Your dad works for my dad."
Classic.
"Your dad works for my dad."
Yeah.
And the crowd suddenly, before you knew it, were singing, "Your dad works for his gran." "Your dad works for his gran." You're right. The university games are amazing atmospheres. They're really wild.
I mean, I'm not sure if that's exactly the way rugby.
That's not the way we rescue rugby or the way we want to portray ourselves.
Or drunken marines. We've got to think of something which isn't drunken marines or drunken students. But there are some games out there. Let me give you some more credit to Northampton. And yes, it isn't within the player welfare thing, but they have really pushed hard in the autumn for invitational games. So they do a lot of barbarians versus, you know, world legends and that kind of thing. So yeah, they are very aware of it, and they're a good club, and hopefully they can turn this around. Exeter Chiefs think that they'll break even next year.
But a bad financial year this year.
And Leicester Tigers have had an extra £1 million pumped in by Peter Tom, or I think it's Peter Tom, the owner. So...
after the £1 million that they got for Sinfield, Borthwick and Walters last year.
Yeah. And Sale will lose more than Exeter, whatever that number might be, in a few weeks' time.
One to keep an eye on. Let's talk some rugby then.
Let's do that.
Do you want to start? Have you seen the red card tonight?
No, I was just looking...
Tonight?
I was
tonight.
Thinking it was a game that I would have liked to have sat down and watched. Racing versus La Rochelle.
Yeah. Racing versus La Rochelle. It is currently 24-10 to Racing. Racing had Teddy Thomas red carded after 20 minutes or so for a high tackle on the La Rochelle.
Teddy Thomas? I thought it was...
Racing. Sorry, La Rochelle have had...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Teddy Thomas plays for...
playing against his old club.
Yes, exactly. Formerly of Racing. Now of La Rochelle. He has been red carded for a high tackle, a pretty wild high tackle on Le Garrick, the Racing scrum half, which is worth looking at.
Yeah, Le Garrick, who is a petit general for Racing, and he's kicking for them. Do you notice who's in the 15 jersey for Racing?
I have, yeah.
Henry Arundel playing fullback.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Any signs of Christian Wade?
No.
Not in the 23, sadly.
I think, to be confirmed, I think we're going to be going to Paris for a Racing game at the end of January. I'm going to Racing.
It's in my diary as well.
Yes. Okay. I wouldn't mind catching up with Christian Wade if he's not involved on the pitch.
Do you want his number?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That'd be cool. So that is an interesting one. And again, just jumping around the different leagues, I watched Toulouse v Clermont last night, which Toulouse were very, very good.
Mm.
I also watched last night, I think the biggest club game of the year so far in any league, Leinster v Munster.
Mm. So I actually don't think this fixture has the heft that it should have.
There were 50,000 people at the Aviva Stadium.
Disagree. Okay, I disagree with myself. That sounds great.
And the Leinster team... Well, they were both strong teams. The Leinster team is particularly strong.
Yeah. So this is the problem.
The Leinster team is almost entirely an Ireland team.
The
it's incredible
welfare
team.
Policies almost always kick in for Ireland versus Ireland games.
Well, they often do around when they're the Christmas derbies, because you've just come in, you're in between Europe, and then a month away from Six Nations.
Now, I don't know the score, but there's no silverware on the line, so I'm guessing Leinster won.
They won 21-16.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. I really, really, really enjoyed it. It was, like you say, I looked at the teams and thought, I was thinking the only Munster players I would take in a combined team would be Ty Byrne in the pack.
Yeah.
And Jack Crowley is the fly half. Other than that, you would pick every single Leinsterman.
Yes, I think that's fair. But the Munster team is more than the sum of its parts.
100%.
They're a great team with amazing spirit.
Listener and good bloke Graham Rowntree is doing good things there.
And I've not seen much of this game. I've seen the Craig Casey try from early on, which was superb.
It was brilliant.
With a break from Zeebo and then the little interplay with, was it Frisch, Scannell?
Yeah.
And Casey goes in the corner.
It was great. Leinster kind of woke up and did their thing. But the interesting part for this for me, the talking point was at the 10 jersey with Johnny Sexton. He was being paraded at the ground before the game with the Leinster fans saying goodbye.
Is he going on
the last time he was there wasn't... Because he didn't play in any World Cup warm-up games, and his last game there was Leinster v La Rochelle when he got a bit in trouble.
Whoops.
So this was a whole lot more of a happier affair.
I find it so strange that maybe the best player to play that day, or that could have played that day, just has decided to stop playing. I mean, why has he stopped playing? He's still world class, even though
he's getting paid an absolute fortune by whatever financial company he has.
But that'll be there next year, and the year after that, and the year after that, and it'll be there forever. He could go back to France. I mean, I'm not. He probably doesn't want to. I was talking to a relatively senior, older international about this, and in the end, they just don't want to leave their family. But you could go to France and take your family with you. Mind you, that is quite a big. He's 39, isn't he?
He'll be 39 at the end of the season.
He can still do it.
He's still good. He's still brilliant.
He can still do it. He's still...
Oh, I totally agree. Well, Ross Byrne was wearing 10 for Leinster and went off really injured, and he was obviously gutted because he fell down for Ireland, the pecking order behind Jack Crowley, who he was up against, went off injured in a massive game, and Jack Crowley absolutely bossed it. And Kieran Frawley, who came on for Ross Byrne, look really good as well. So I think Ross Byrne will be 5p, 50p, bit scared about losing his spot maybe for Leinster. I think he will be the main man, but they've got two others. His younger brother.
Yeah, who's meant to be the boy.
Who's meant to be the boy. And Sam Prendergast. Who's meant to be the boy.
I would start looking in France for
under-20s.
Yeah, I start looking in France for a few opportunities now.
Yeah, but I do like Jack Crowley. So, I really enjoyed that game.
So that's interesting, the battle of the fly halves and the pecking order for fly halves, because maybe we could use that to start us off on Friday night, where last week we had two England fly halves up against each other in Magic Marcus and Sir Owen, and it was a comprehensive victory for Owen Farrell. This week, Marcus Smith got chance to go up against another England fly half.
Yes.
Although second choice England fly half at Northampton Saints, and Marcus Smith was again summarily outplayed by man of the match, George Furbank.
Yeah, so George Furbank last week I thought had an awful game, a truly awful game. Close to the action, he does look a bit better. I mean, he played well. Northampton played very well in general. If I was Quinns, I'd be super disappointed about this. Because I think Quinns, of those two teams, is the more substantial, more balanced team. I think they have the advantage over Northampton in almost every single area. I just think they're really quite good. But they're just fickle. And that beating against Saracens has left them in a very fragile position. And, they just... Well, what can you say? They got absolutely battered.
I don't totally know that I agree with you in that... I think the pack is pretty fearsome from Northampton.
Well, where do I look? Where would I start my investigations here? And that would be second row and front row. And I do like the Quinns front row. I even like their second...
Jack Walker against Matavesi's kind of... Waller against... Lewis.
Ethan Waller's not scrimmaged well for years now.
Davison against Finn Baxter.
It's not
Joe Marler.
Yeah, it's not Joe Marler.
Quinns put their second choice front row and second row, really... I think.
Ernie Herbs, or however you say his name, is a truly monstrous man. A truly monstrous. But you wouldn't say he's in great shape.
No. No.
To put it mildly, he could maybe lose a
Alex, Alex Coles and Chinyamunga are both trying to get on the England radar.
I mean, they're promising. I mean, Northampton do a really good job of assembling promising young English players. They always seem to buy like the best young English players from
London. Irish. It's what everyone's done. That's what they've done. When you look to who they've added to their squad, it's like, oh, Munger and Pearson.
Pearson.
But to be fair, they've always been good at this. So, yeah, whether it be when they added Miley to the squad, or you know, Christian Day, or Foden, Luther Burrell, they're always good at shopping for young English talent. They've done this for years and done it very, very well.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
Their opposition had a couple of talented London Irish players in Cheltenham South, and Lovejoy Chawatama, who both came off the bench.
And Will Joseph.
And Will Joseph, started at 13, didn't he?
Was there four London Irish players involved in this game?
Because you've got Pearson.
Pearson, they're five.
Yeah.
Crikey. They assembled some team, didn't they? They kept it together. That's the story of London Irish forever, though, isn't it? Which is, if only they kept it together.
Well, it will be now they've disbanded.
Yeah.
Of particular significance was I was interested to see Caden Murley and Tommy Freeman.
Who weren't really the wingers to write home about. Oh, Murley.
Freeman played 13.
13 is what's interesting there.
Yeah.
Because Slight Home was the boy. Murley scored, was it the second or first try? So they went
first try early on, yeah.
Northampton deserve a lot of credit for the way that they play. I think that they have a very nice, fluid way of doing things. I'm still not convinced that they're going to win anything. I'm still not convinced.
I'm the same. They can win games like this where they match up nicely against Quinns, particularly where Quinns rest a chunk of their tight five. They matched up pretty well. I don't think that they're not going to win. Northampton aren't going to win anything.
Sorry to sound like a broken record, everyone needs this, but they just need a massive second row and another massive front row. They are like Gloucester every single other year for the last decade. And two more players away. But actually, the rest of that team is very complete. I do love how it all sort of clicks together. Mm. And they do win occasionally, to be fair. And they do win at the right times of year. Right at the start, right at the end. And they get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they'll get in the playoffs. I think they're good enough for that. But I don't think they're going to win anything.
At the expense of who? Exeter and Bath, maybe.
Oh, I've got loads of things to say about Exeter.
But Sale and Saracens are both looking very good.
Yeah, Sale and Saracens are definitely going to be in there. I think Leicester will get up there. I really do.
Yeah, I think so.
And then it's one of the others. Maybe Bath, maybe Quinns.
Everyone's so saying. So, I mean, the low level of the salary cap, meaning everyone spends up to it, with the new very, very fearsome enforcement mechanisms, which means you do not want to get caught because you know what happens if you do get caught.
Yeah.
It just, all these teams look, broadly speaking, the same. They play differently, but in terms of their strength, they look the same.
Except for those top three.
Or top
top two plus Leicester. I am counting Leicester in that.
So I think the starting Quinns team, despite what happens to them against Saracens, is superb. I think, like I was saying about Northampton, I think their starting team is pretty good. Not amazing, pretty good. In fact, all the starting teams are really good. So you just have to be lucky on the day. If you get your starting team out, there's a good chance that you'll win. With the exception of Newcastle.
Well, and you are going to see, I made this point last week or the week before, because the squads, they do have talent, obviously, but they're also thinner than they were.
Really thin.
Like, noticeably thinner than they were.
I am really quite enjoying.
You're going to get these kind of one-sided matchups. So you're going to get a team putting it, they want a big home following, they want to put on a show for the crowd, they want to get the fans in, so they'll put a really strong team at home. And then you get a team who's had two tough weeks. They want to rest for a week, and they'll put in a really weak team away. So you will get these kind of matchups. The key question is who can do it, either in Europe, which is probably no one, or towards the end of the season in the final two rounds, three games of the season. That's where it counts. And there, it's hard to look beyond Sale, Saracens, and Leicester in my mind for those. Yeah. I think the two finalists will be made up from those three teams.
Yeah, you're probably right. Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're probably right.
And maybe Quinns can do it.
I think Quinns are right up there. I really think they are. When everyone's back, they're going to be all right. They're going to be fine. I'm trying to think who else is good.
They're all good.
Bath,
Northampton, Quinns are all in that bun fight together. Exeter, I think, will probably fade over the course of a whole season.
Yeah. Exeter will. They're too young.
Yeah. So I've got many thoughts on Exeter. I've got many, many thoughts, if you want to hear them.
Well, they had a workmanlike win today. Henry Slade, again, the main man in that team.
He was awful.
No, as in just like the leadership, though.
He, he's like the lone famous person.
Exactly.
That game today...
I wouldn't go so far as to say awful.
He was dreadful today. He was not. He's missing kicks. He knocked the ball on when he fell over.
None of those Exeter players could hold on to the
ball.
Yeah,
Newcastle's great for bringing the overall standard of every player down. But
right, just again, let me just read the back line except for Henry Slade, just to emphasise the point. Cairns, Skinner, Hawkins, great. They're all great. Faye Wabosu. Hammersley, Wyatt.
Hammersley was class, and yeah, Wyatt's been really good.
They're great, but these are kids.
Yeah. So let me just tell you where I am with Exeter, right? So, did you hear Rob Baxter talking at the end of the game?
No.
I did, yeah.
I just loved it. I absolutely loved what he had to say. And we'll come to him in a second. I was watching them play, and they have obviously stripped things down to the very bare minimum. They are playing like they're world-class players, with players who are definitely not world class. What do I mean by that? I mean that they are just trying to dominate the game line as if they are La Rochelle. So you see these boys running into contact as quickly. The way they speed up the ball is just to run into contact as quickly as possible. Vermaelen is taking a ton of ball. You see Roots doing it. You see the new lad, who's the...
The number 8, Davis.
Davis, Tuima.
Tuima is one I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. They're playing like they're La Rochelle, but they're not La Rochelle. And my prediction is we are going to see one of the all-time great losses when Exeter go to France. Because if they attempt this sort of rugby against the big boys, they are going to get smashed to pieces. Now, you can do it against Newcastle, no problem. But against...
It wasn't no problem. It was tough for them in this game against the Newcastle kids.
Saturday, December the 9th... 2 p.m. kickoff.
Who have they got?
Toulon.
Oh, well, Exeter. We're going to find out because it's not going to go well for Exeter. I can tell you right now.
And then the following week, Sunday, December the 17th, Exeter host Munster.
Brilliant. Those are going to be some of the... I'm going to put my neck on the line right now and say those are going to be two of the biggest losses in the club's history in Europe.
Oh, I've just looked. Sunday, January 21st, Bayonne playing Exeter.
Oh, there you go. Boys.
Is it a home game for you?
Can I get onto the club? Can I get on their plane? Their charter plane?
Well, I think we're fairly popular in Exeter at the moment. Now would be the time to ask Tim.
Exeter, Steve, come on, hook me up.
Well, he could do if he still worked there.
Huh?
He's gone. Steve-O's gone.
Steve-O?
Yeah, media Steve-O's gone. So
that wasn't acrimonious, was it?
Not that I know of.
Good.
Great guy, actually.
One of the best... In fact, I would go, now he's departed his role, and I don't know the circumstances of departing his role. Hopefully he's gone on to something great.
He has.
The best comms guy in the Premiership.
I really enjoyed talking to him.
To the point, I can say this, I can speak really openly now. Steve would tell us the team, days in advance, because there was just total trust. Mm. That total trust that weren't going to spill that news anywhere.
What about your fantasy rugby team, Tim? Well.
I won two championships, that's all that matters.
So it looks like everything's coming home to roost now.
But you could call him and ask any question about any player at any time. He'll give you a totally honest answer, knowing that you're never going to spill the beans on that, in total integrity, and that made it so good to work. And as a result, I think the content you get, one of the reasons that, I mean, Rob Baxter, as you said, he speaks brilliantly, but you can have a real think about what question to ask him, because they're open books. They tell you everything, and you can go, if we can replicate that on the telly, that will give the people watching a great insight.
You know, so I'm so glad you mentioned this. So, one, I think they're going to be in for two almighty hidings when they play in Europe. That's not criticism. That's just where they are as a team. But you can see what they're trying to do, and I like it, and I know the science behind it. So Rob Baxter gets up and talks to Craig Doyle. I've got to say, the whole BT Sport thing today was brilliant. So Craig Doyle was ace, and they had Stuart Hogg,
He's done every Sunday, hasn't he?
Yeah,
I think.
And because it's extra as well.
Yeah.
He's added
the last three Sundays have all been extra.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course they have, yeah. And then Tom May, who played at Newcastle. Yeah. And it makes a huge, huge difference. And the quality of questioning and the quality of answer from Baxter was great. So he's like, all we wanted to do is control the middle third of the field. And we did that. And because of that,
yeah,
I loved it.
So I really liked that as well because... So the question that was asked was... Put some stats up on the screen. These are key match stats.
Love
so,
that, yeah.
Like turnovers, meters made, tackles missed, that kind of stuff. Can you just talk us through like where you're happy with, where you're not happy with? And Baxter did not answer that question. He answered the question that he wanted, but it gave a much better insight, which was those stats there. We'll digest them in the week. We'll have a look at them. We're not talking about them now. All we said was before the game and at halftime, we want to control the middle third. We want to stop them doing their thing and do our thing in that period of the game, and we did that. I'm delighted with the boys. We're a young team. We can only kind of take one thing at a time.
Yeah,
and it was brilliant to get that kind of insight.
And brilliant.
Yeah,
yeah.
So people awesome. Talk about entries into the 22, and that, you know, this is obvious, isn't it? It's like you want to score goals, you want to enter. You know, but like, where is the battle for that one? And obviously, it's a middle third. But it's so nice to hear a coach talking about middle third. How we're going to strip down the game.
You just reminded me of something which used to get said loads, and you never hear it anymore. Treating the 22 like your try line, which is this exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, Extra reminded me a lot of Leicester a few years ago. Getting into the 22, but not necessarily scoring enough points. And they're very rudimentary with ball in hand. They just hammer forward. And, you know, as some very strong MMA competitors say, strength is a skill. You know, it is a skill. You've got to have some very big, very aggressive players. Now, I think they've got the raw ingredients, like the right size, the right type of player, but they're all young and proven and on a budget, aren't they? You don't have Will Skelton. You don't have, you know, Dave Ewers, you don't have whoever it may be. So they've sort of got the right raw ingredients. If they can mature this group together to play that way in the long term, it's going to be very exciting. But how do you keep them around for that long? Because as soon as they become the players that Exeter want them to, playing the game plan that they want them to, guess who wants them? Everybody else in the world.
And having Welsh boys in that squad.
Yeah.
Like Tishunza, who's injured, like Shunza. Jenkins, like Hawkins.
Potentially Faye Wobosu.
Yeah.
Could he be Welsh?
Welsh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of Welsh. Welsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing he went to Welsh school.
He might have gone to a Welsh school. He definitely went to... No, I think he went to Cardiff Met to play rugby. And then I think he was... Was he at Wasps? And they went under, was he?
Signed his first professional deal with hometown club Cardiff back in December 21.
Oh, there you are.
There you go.
There you go. So I think he might have been studying.
He also studied at Bristol's Clifton College.
Oh, did he?
Grew up in Llandaff.
There you go. So very much Welsh.
Yeah, definitely Welsh. So what was I saying about Exeter then?
They've got these young guys that everyone will want them.
Yeah, and they'll just go. They'll just go because they're exactly the sort of players that will do well in France.
Yeah.
Aggressive.
And dovetailing that with something we were talking about earlier, the sustainability of rugby, something we said a lot, so we don't need to go into, but there's talk about Henry Arundel having a hybrid contract next year so that he is able to stay in France and still play for England. Bearing in mind these clubs are losing money, just allow it.
I mean, yes.
Let it happen.
I want it to happen, right? It fills me with resentment the amount of money that the lads have lost because of...
Over the years where they haven't been allowed to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. It really angers me because, you know, it is a once... You have one shot at your big contract, really. You know, you go academy, first team squad, you might get another first team contract, you get your one big contract, and if you're not making England money at that time... Career's over because after that big contract you fall off a cliff. So I just hate rugby, how it's ran and how players are treated in terms of where they can play, and as if people own their their labour.
Welsh players have had it much worse than English players. So
yeah, they have. There's no two ways about that. You know, like Ollie, that's the one I went to school with. Hawkins in Exeter.
Well, he signed that contract with Exeter before he was a Welsh international.
We'll just make an arbitrary decision. Mate, you can't play.
I know.
So I hope he does great. He does great things in the future, hopefully in France.
Joe Hawkins. I was going to say Rob Hawkins, but he was the hooker.
Former Exeter and Bath hooker.
Tigers, Newcastle.
No. He was Bath first. Definitely Bath first.
Bath, Newcastle.
Mark my words, it was Bath.
Bath.
Leicester Tigers?
Leicester.
Because he was in the under-21s team with my brother.
Newcastle, Bristol, according to Wikipedia.
He's got Andy Goode levels of clubs.
Yeah?
So he's played for Bristol, Newcastle. Do you say Newcastle?
So he's 2003 to 2010, Tigers. Bath. 10 to 14, Tigers. 14 to 16, Falcons. And then 16... onwards, although according to this he's still at Bristol, but he is now also 40, so I don't think he is still at Bristol.
Fine.
So four.
I was getting him confused. I was mixing him up then with Neil Clark, thinking he'd been at Exeter, but that was Neil Clark.
Right.
Anyway,
That game in the Friday night game, the Saints Quins game, it was kind of quite predictable. Early try from Murley, early try from Slightholm, and then you're on to this try-fest. Five tries in the first half, five tries in the second half, 10 tries overall, lots of tries. In that Newcastle game, three tries, a try after 39 seconds, three tries in the first 10 minutes, and then nothing until the 65th minute where Exeter scored the two tries to take the game away from Newcastle. But they teased us with a try-fest. And it just never materialised.
Yes.
It just kind of fell apart.
Well, it is in the northeast.
It was. I'm sure it was very, very cold.
It did look cold. It did look absolutely brutal.
In the standing stand behind the try line, left-hand try line as the camera's panning across the pitch, there's basically no one there. It looked like an Arctic wilderness.
What was the attendance?
I've not seen it.
Well, they released a tweet from Newcastle, I think, this week saying, congratulations, 60% full, which would be great. But then it followed up with one particular stand. So one of the stands was 60% full.
It was not that one at the end.
No, it was not.
Newcastle, I feel like they're not a totally lost cause, but they've got to keep this team, the young guys together, the guys with experience. But the problem is they're not going to keep the guys. Anyone with experience is going to be leaving there.
And they should be going down at the end of the season if they finish bottom. But
there's no relegation, or is there relegation?
No, there's not.
Oh, well, then who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're already out of playoff contention.
Because there is a relegation playoff that kicks in at some point, isn't there?
One day.
Next year, I think.
Is that next year?
Yeah.
But apparently.
They say. I believe it when I actually see it.
But it's also only eligible if the team getting... who win the championship meet the eligibility criteria, including having a 10,000-seater stadium.
Yeah.
Which maybe one currently does.
It's allowed to be 5,000 as long as they have plans for the other five. Just dovetailing from Exeter, I think it's appropriate to just glance across the channel to Pau, who are top of the top 14, and absolutely Joe Simmons
and Dan Robson
absolutely smashed. Yeah, Dan Robson and Joe Simmons.
Was it Stade Francais?
Smashed Stade Francais.
Joe Marchant, Stade Francais,
30 points to 6.
So do you think they'd have done better if England had taken Robson and Simmons the World Cup?
Well, neither of them have played 13 like Joe Marchant, but maybe.
And they're both playing behind a very... Well, just having a look at the Poe pack, but they must be playing behind a good pack. But, I don't recognise many of the names.
Luke Whitelock, Kiwi number 8.
Luke Whitelock and Papidze, the Georgian prop.
But
how do you know Papidze's Georgian?
I don't recognise any of them.
But it was a beatdown. I'm just looking at the top 14 table. The mighty Bayona are just above the relegation spots. That's a bit nerve-wracking. So are La Rochelle, though.
What? I've not committed to support them yet.
They'll be all right.
Let's just see how this goes.
and my beloved Bordeaux.
I was asked, so right,
seventh.
So let's just we got an email actually. It's contactdavechasers@gmail.com.
We've got loads of emails this week.
Yeah, we've got loads of emails on that. One of them was, so we've talked about this. So Phil's top 14 or URC team is Ulster, and that was something we did on the podcast right in the early days.
Yeah,
JB's your beloved Benetton.
I guess it is. Yeah, I suppose it is.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
It is. I do not have a URC team, and that was someone was asking, what's your URC team? I don't have one, and if we're filling in these gaps, maybe I should pick
the Dragons. Go on, they.
Top 14, I've gone with my beloved Bayonne.
Mm.
Phil's with Bordeaux, and JB is penciled in La Rochelle.
No, well, Racing, I just can't see. It's easy as, I don't know yet. The answer is I really don't know. I want to follow. Toulouse isn't taken yet, and I can get there easily. And I feel that is, you know,
glory hunting. But yeah, why not?
I feel Toulouse might be the only club big enough for me. Because if I start supporting La Rochelle, it's going to be all about me and not about La Rochelle.
You have a Stade Francais jersey.
Yeah, do you know, I used to love Stade Francais.
Why not resurrect your Stade Francais love? If you already used to love them, why not love them again?
That was my first...
Do you know an old flame.
Can I just tell you how hard this kit was to buy back in
so
the day?
So I'm looking at JB pointing to the a bright...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pink. It's like a Barbie pink Stade Francais jersey with blue lightning bolts.
This was the first ever Stade Francais pink kit. So when it first happened a decade ago...
More than a decade ago.
This was the one.
Probably nearly 20 years old, though.
Adidas was the...
Yeah, do you know what? I know where I was when I bought it. I was working in Beardmore & Co, independent financial advisors. I was where I now currently work, so gone full circle. So, yeah, you're right. I'd have been... How old would I have been? I'd have been 19 or 20 when I bought that.
So it is 20 years old.
Yes. So, to buy it, there's no such thing as Google Translate. So you had to sort of... work your way around the Stade Francais website. And also, at the time, I was being told off by my dad quite a lot for not working very hard. And it was one of those websites which had automatic music play as soon as you landed on it. So there's no disguising.
Accordion music, I imagine.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but I remember the
David music Guetta.
The music would strike up. And then I finally bought it, and it took something like 6 weeks to arrive. But when it did arrive, my word, look at it. Look at it. Isn't it beautiful?
It is a beautiful kit. And you could dismount that shirt and wear it to a Stade Francais game and look like a proper retro fan.
But the thing is now, they're just too popular. So then
Stade Francais are?
Yeah, everyone started wearing the pink shirts, Tim. You don't remember this because you weren't as into it as I was. So I've got that one. I've got the one which is done by which famous designer did 2 years later with all the little faces on. Had that. There's one which is made out of something which looks like denim, but it wasn't. It was like a rugby shirt to look like denim. And then everybody started copying it. So the novelty of Stade Francais rapidly wore off. However, I don't know if you noticed the kit they played in this weekend or last weekend. It was very much the old blue and red bolts. And I love it.
Well, I think you wouldn't be... It's a sexy team to follow.
They are cool.
But... it's also an underdog because they're the neighbours to the much fancied Racing, and you'd be supporting the team, trying to take down Stuart Lancaster's Racing.
Now that is quite like, and doing it the right way. Doing it the right way with flair and pomposity and all that kind of stuff. Don't forget, they have won the top 14 within, I'm going to say, 7 years ago. With Parisi. Jonathan Donte burst onto the scene. I'm not sure who else was in that scene, but they weren't. They've not always been terrible.
No.
Of late. They were terrible before that, though.
I've found... So, I was searching for when Stade Francais first went to pink kits, and I found one of the most incredible articles I've ever read on the switch to pink from the Irish Independent. And I'm actually going to read a section of this verbatim, because this is remarkable. So this was published Wednesday, 26th of October, 2005. So that was the season when Stade Francais first switched to pink. So here we go. A top psychologist has claimed that Stade Francais' new pink playing shirts, which shocked rugby viewers throughout the world this weekend, are an obvious cry for help, in quotation marks.
Wow.
Dr. Richard Williams, a top psychologist based in London, has claimed the shocking shirts are an outward manifestation of inner troubles. Direct quote from Mr. Williams.
Goodness me.
Just look at the amount of violence that has occurred both on and off the field in French rugby this season. This violence is a representation of other insecurities felt by the rugby men of France. he goes on to say, Stade Francais' pink shirt, whilst easy to laugh at, is clearly not something a normal, healthy club would wear.
What?
This is a cry for help and needs to be addressed urgently.
By who?
I implore the IRB to act quickly.
What?
It is highly disturbing for a fan to walk into the stadium. This is in quotations from Dr. Richard Williams. I just checked. This is not 1st of April. This is not the Union. This is the Irish Independent. It is highly disturbing for a fan to walk into a stadium and find their team wearing such outfits. It is bound to have a knock-on effect.
That is totally one of the most disturbing things about that whole... Dr. Richard Williams, this is 20 years ago... is no doubt sat at home right now on his state-funded pension, and somebody, most likely the Irish taxpayer, has funded his career.
He's based in London. Top psychologist based in London.
Our taxes.
Our hard-earned taxes.
I mean, I'm okay with Irish taxes being... I'm more okay with it. And he's going to... You know, the amount of money we waste on absolute morons. I mean, to even come up with these ideas in of themselves, it makes you unhinged. A cry for help.
I'm reading this. This has to be a joke.
When was it published? April 1st.
It was not April 1st. It was 26th of October 2005.
We've come a long way.
I feel we have. Like, I'm reading. So some of these.
To the people that go, well, things are worse than ever. These issues are worse than ever. Like, just go back 17, 18 years and read an article. My word.
The worst thing in the world is that this guy. Is university educated. He probably is regulated by a professional body. He's probably receiving a whole career worth of taxpayer money. And he's probably retired now on the taxpayer. And this is the... And when this is written, someone should pick this up and go, hang on a minute, are we paying this guy? Is this guy in actual a position of power and or authority? He needs to be removed immediately.
God knows... This might actually be a parody article reading some of these quotes, or the world was very different at the time.
Well, it is so, Irish Independent.
According to this, Juan Martin Hernandez, the fullback, Stade's fullback for the game, a quote from after the game was, "I did not want to be seen in public like this. This is not rugby."
No, this must be a joke.
Do you know, actually...
Because the Irish Independent is notoriously clickbait.
Hang on.
This was 2005, though.
Clickbait didn't exist then.
Yeah, clickbait wasn't
the same.
So it
wasn't on your... Maybe it was on your bloody...
What's the name of the person who wrote it?
Tony Ward. This is Touchlines compiled by Tony Ward.
Tony Ward.
So it might be parody.
Irish Independent. No, it's come up on the search. It automatically... Tony Ward, journalist.
Oh my God.
He's a for Independent, the Irish Independent, and the Sunday Independent. Tony Ward, journalist. His latest article 3 hours ago. Leinster need more accuracy to win Europe.
Is it a cry for help?
And in October,
I would believe that from Leinster.
last month, he wrote an article for the Irish Independent. I hate the D4 slur towards rugby.
The what?
I don't know what that means.
D4.
The D4.
D, letter D, number four. I don't. Let's not go in there. I don't know what that is. But
the four.
But the point being that he is a rugby. If it's the same guy, he's a legit rugby journalist.
He's only quoting the expert.
Yeah. If that is what Juan Martín Hernández said?
No, do you know, on that one, I think that is serious. I'm sure there was actual ruptions about this. Was it Max Gazzini that you saw in the team?
See, you even know old owners.
The owner, certainly at one point, relatively recently, was Peter Hans Wild.
No, see if it's Max Gazzini. Max Gazzini was a gay fella. And I think what did he do? It's not comic books because that's too long.
Yeah, that was too long.
Maybe advertising. I think he was in advertising. So he bought in all the pink. He used to spray perfume in the stands and whatnot. And I'm sure their MD was Richard Paul Jones.
So Max Cassini, French entrepreneur, and until June 2011, president of the Stade Francais Rugby Union Club.
That's the one. How did he make his money? Advertising?
Businessman, career...
I've signs in my mind, but
links to Bernard Lepore.
Oh God,
this here is we right go. Up your street.
No wonder he's got so much money.
It doesn't really say from this article.
Oh, I like it. Shady, lots of cash. Shady.
Yeah, yeah. When you see Bernard Laporte's name in there,
I wonder if Stade Francais was very much like the wrestlers were to the Dupont family in Foxcatcher.
I'm just gonna finish up making this plea, for this pitch for you.
Oh, sorry, yeah, okay.
Stade Francais. Stade Francais.
Oh, this is what you wanted me to do anyway?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
So the reason why you should pick Stade Francais, a few reasons. They are owned by, as Phil just touched on, Hans Peter Wild.
Okay.
He's a pretty cool character.
Of Orangina fortune.
Correct.
Or is it Capri Sun? Or is it both?
Ooh, good question.
So that is a good question. I think it might be Capri Sun, actually.
Yeah.
Stade Francais fought for the original... What's the tournament called? What's the shield? Brenner? What's the shield they play for in the top 14 again? The Brennus.
Okay.
They played the original game for the Brennus against... Toulouse. They were founded in 1883, so they were 140 years old this year.
Crikey, that's
so they're
good.
They were one of the oldest clubs in France. They fought for the original. They've won 14 titles over the years, but like you say, you aren't just going to the automatic champs. Famous former players, Matthew Bastereau, who else? Let's have a look. Lionel Boxis.
Yes. So that
Christophe Dominici.
Oh yes.
Oh, what a player! Fabien Galtier played for Stade Francais.
Yeah, did.
And I'm just trying to find other players that you would have. Marc Lievremont played.
Lau Mappi played for them for a year or so.
Lau Mappi did,
although I think
the very famous prop Peter de Villiers played there.
Olivier Rouma.
Yes, South African and French.
Dimitri Zarzewski.
Did Pascal
David Skrella. Rabah Slimani.
Yeah, they've had loads.
Sylvain Martinet. That's some great players.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were an absolute powerhouse back in the day.
Gus Pichot.
Martin Hernandez. Yeah, he went there straight after Bristol.
Yeah.
Morgan.
James Haskell.
No, more importantly, Morgan.
Williams. Canadian,
yeah. Morgan Williams, the Canadian scrum half, played there.
Paul Sackey, Rich Paul Jones, as you mentioned.
Rich Paul Jones was the last English amateur to play in the professional era.
Great number eight, Simon Taylor.
Yes, he was a superb number eight.
Brian Lima, the chiropractor.
Oh, Felipe Contepomi, Juan Martín Hernández, Rodrigo Roncero,
England sevens international Ollie Phillips.
Yeah, he was top try scorer there, I think, at one point. Yeah.
George Smith. Will Genia, Digby Ioane.
Yeah, those weren't good. Those were not good years.
And Radiki you can Samo. Get there direct from Manchester anytime you want. So is Stade Francais your top 14 side?
I don't know yet. I'm gonna, man.
You hate Paris.
I don't like Paris, I've got to say.
I like Paris. It was.
I didn't like Paris. I didn't like Marseille.
What didn't you like? Oh, you're so wrong about Marseille. I think you're wrong about Paris. I think you're wrong about France in general.
I love France. I'm a massive.
What bits do you love? What parts of France do you love?
Not the south. Not the north.
The south coast. Nice.
But not Marseille. You've got to give Marseille.
Not Marseille.
Go.
Yeah, we do.
Maybe.
We need to be fair to Marseille and give it another go in summer season.
We were there when it was pissing with rain, and if we, there's this one little park called Le Cours Julien, and it's where all the cool kids go at night. It's a very
All I can say about Paris, when I've been there, it's been cold and wet and hostile and rat infested.
That is one of the biggest memories.
Yeah.
Just the size and sheer number of rats.
Yeah, it's incredible, actually.
They were enormous.
Yeah, I mean, Paris is not a particularly attractive city.
Some parts of Paris are amazing.
I tell you what.
Other parts of Paris are a bit terrifying.
I went to, they've got a museum there, and it's basically full of animal skeletons, and it was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Like, an old school museum, like... There was no links to slavery in it. It was just cases of bones, and it was amazing, absolutely amazing. So yeah, maybe we'll have a look and see where we're up to.
No commitment yet.
Right. Okay. Fine. On we go then. Any other games that people particularly enjoyed?
Bath versus Salem was nice. And yeah. Before you turn your nose up, Tim Cocker...
One try is a bit too many for you, Tim.
Yes, exactly. Look, this is almost twice as good as some of the 6-3 victories. So I don't know what you're complaining about.
Fair. I worked on Bath 3, Sale 6, Faf de Klerk Man of the Match.
One of my favourite ever games. In fact, some of my favourite ever games have been this. They're absolute scrum fest down in Bath, which Sale prevailed. Sale of... pretty much had the upper hand over Bath now for a few years, and this was no different. And I like the idea of the two contrasting styles, with Finn Russell trying to guide Bath with missed passes. So I imagine this game, before the game, was going to go something like this. Bath were going to pretend to be really hard, show up at Sale, get absolutely battered, and Finn Russell was going to try and miss pass his way out of trouble. And that's kind of what happened. And in the end, George Ford knocked over two penalties at the end.
Well, do you know what,
game over.
Do you know what Bath have done? Which it's just when you read the names on the team sheet for the Bath pack: De Toy, Jonker, Van Veltzer, Kurt Seer, Cloherty. It's like, I spot a theme.
What's the name of the head coach of Bath as well?
Let me check. Van Graan, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, they are. Look, you've got to give Bath credit, because they were 3 years have been horrific, and now are they second still, or have they dropped down?
I think they're third or fourth.
It's a vast improvement. So yeah, I think they'll be fine. I love the fact that Sale absolutely dispatched them though. And
by 2 points in the last minute.
Yeah, Sale need a bit more respect. I mean, like, we shake our head that, you know, it's only 12 or 11.
11-9.
But, you know, it's a good result for Sale.
It's a great habit to be having in the results. You look at Sale, they're the only team to have only lost one game. They've won six, lost one. So bearing in mind they've won six, lost one, their points difference is plus 17.
Perfect.
They got hammered by Exeter as well, didn't they?
Oh yeah, there's that one.
They conceded like 40 odd points. Yeah.
Which is weird, actually. How Exeter play and how Sale perceive themselves, you'd think Sale would deal with that really nicely.
But yeah, Sale are also the third lowest point scoring team in the Prem. They've only scored more points than Newcastle and Gloucester.
Yeah, but when you defend that well, so.
Well, they do. They have the second best defence behind only Exeter.
Well, again, is this not sort of showing us what we already know about the Premiership, which is it's about what you leave out? So it is obvious to me that Northampton leave out defence and they rely on scoring lots of points, and that's great. But if no one's scoring any points against you, that's probably better. So... yeah, I'm all down for how Sale are going about their business.
Especially with a guy like George Ford in your team.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
A team that doesn't concede points and George Ford.
Yeah, if Alex Sanderson is convincing all those young lads to fly off the line and absolutely annihilate people, that's great. I'm all for it. All for it.
Sale did have some bad news this week.
Tom Curry. Do you know, there is talk about this injury being far more serious than even this has suggested.
Because it's season ending, is what we've heard.
Yeah, it could be you know, detrimental to his entire career. It could be something which just does not heal.
What is it?
Hip.
Oh, God.
So it's a really, really nasty
one. Is it a bone thing or a muscular? Yeah,
so as I understand it, it's one of those injuries which he'll come back from at some point, but it's going to need to be managed for the rest of his career. It's not a simple one, this.
He's 24 still.
Well, he's 24, but he's got 50 caps.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got some collisions, isn't it?
And the way that he plays the game, he really does put... It's good if they've got a spare.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what do you do with a guy like that? Because I don't think you can manage him, really. You can manage the injury through training and conditioning, I guess. You can do that.
Imagine how massive he's going to be, because he'll take out all that frustration just
in the gym.
Yeah.
But like, he loves the physicality. You know, you can just see him on the field. Like, he loves the physicality so much that I think he's going to end up like many great players, like Sam Underhill, like so many who just love to smash things. Your body can't do it for that long.
And so many who never have the careers that they should have done. Like someone like Tom Rees comes to mind.
Yeah.
And there's lots and lots of players who just never made it because they loved it, like loved the physicality too much.
It's a heroic way to play the game, and I'm so glad that these guys exist, but it's not good for you.
Guys like Tom Curry are like NFL running backs, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They absolutely are. I mean, Tom Curry is just... I think... More than anyone in Sale Sharks, the guy who has learnt the most from having all these massive South Africans around is him. He actually plays like... The way he handles himself now is like an extra Dupree, but he has other skills on top of that.
He would get in ahead of Siya Kolisi in the South Africa team.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah. From a performance perspective, not from a leadership. From a performance perspective.
Right. Yeah. On leadership, Tim's favourite player. Did you see this clip this week from Owen Farrell?
The best leader.
The clip of Luke Pearce being a bit off.
Well, do you know?
Well, both of them being bell ends, really.
Yeah. I'm kind of with Owen Farrell on this. Yeah.
So I think both of them acted okay. I have no problem with either of them doing what they did.
No.
I think Owen Farrell's reaction is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. After the game.
Shall I play it? Can we hear it? Will we be able
you
to hear
can't
it?
Hear it, no. You can read it, really.
So the conversation between Owen Farrell and Luke Pearce was, Owen Farrell says, quote, "That's three at the mall." In other words, he's saying repeated penalties.
Yeah.
Are you going to start thinking about a yellow card? Now, he's the captain of the team.
Yep.
So reminding the referee, you know, repeated infringements. I think that's a legitimate conversation to have. Luke Pearce said, "Thanks, I can count," in quite a sardonic fashion. Mm-hmm. Which... I think the sarcasm was unnecessary. And Owen Farrell's response was, "Don't be rude to me. There's no need to be rude to me."
He's right, actually.
He is.
And do you know what? I wish more people said that to Nigel Owens. I honestly think this. Because referees, I don't mind the occasional one, but when you start venerating this behaviour, like, this is brilliant, this is what it's all about. Aren't rugby referees great? Look at the respect. I don't think it is respectful. I don't think all this, it's not football. I mean, I think that's disrespectful to football. There's nothing respectful about being disrespectful to another sport. Nothing. And then all these refs, I don't think they want to be the guys with the sound bites, but there is more of these one-liners than I'd like. I don't mind them occasionally, but some, I think they need to cut it out.
Yeah, well, interestingly, I think, so I was trying to decide, when I watched it, I was trying to go, is my Owen Farrell bias at play here?
Yeah.
Because my instant response was like, totally fair enough, Owen. Like, he did not need
on
to be sarcastic.
On the street, it's fine, right? But yeah. That's not his job.
The bit that, because I'm with you, I think Farrell's within his right to do that. The problem comes where Farrell has, not very long ago, 3-4 weeks ago, conceded what ended up being a match-losing penalty if everything else stayed exactly the same, which it doesn't. But he conceded a penalty for talking to a referee in the wrong way in the England-South Africa game.
Yeah.
Maybe he does just need to bite his tongue.
Yeah, I mean, there were
maybe
other
that's
ways
what
to
makes
ask.
Him...
He could have made Luke Pearce look even worse by killing him with kindness.
Thank you, sir. That's what we're saying.
Like, I don't know what. Actually, I don't know what he could have said. I think he was fair enough. I think he was fair enough.
The initial question. This is why you want an Alan Wynne Jones, right? The question is important. The initial question shouldn't be that's three at the ruck, so because you're telling him something and you're making him make a decision. You could ask him how many at the ruck, sir.
Yeah.
Or yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Is this the latest one? Would you
say that's a number of repeated infringements, Luke?
Yeah, there is some way to reframe that question, which is not that's through the ruck. Like you're blaming the ref for the ruck or the maul situation or whatever it is. But then turn around and say, hey, don't be rude to me. It's just not a good look. Wait till after the game. If you've got a real problem with it, wait till after the game. But equally, refs need to cut this out as well. I don't think it's smart, clever, or respectful.
Well, interestingly, I'm just looking at because this clip was shared on Twitter, and you put the link of it in a WhatsApp group. So I clicked through to Twitter where I don't normally go, and I'm just looking at the quote tweets of this, and they are pretty much exclusively going, "Yeah, fair enough, Owen."
Oh really?
So, yeah, almost exclusively saying, "Yeah, ref was being was totally unnecessary there. He was being rude for no reason." Which, bearing in mind, it's Twitter.
Yeah,
if Twitter is coming to Owen Farrell's defence, well, I think he's.
Yeah, you can see. To be fair to the ref, Luke Pearce is Luke Pearce. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, to be fair to
great
Luke
ref.
Pearce,
great ref.
Yeah, he's a really good ref. There's new to as well. There are whole highlight reels of refs giving one-liners and everyone applauding how great it is, and usually. To people that don't really watch rugby, you know, this sort of guy says, "Oh, have you seen those clips of the refs? Isn't it amazing about the amount of respect that they get from the players?" And there is that. And Owen Farrell should have sort of towed that line and said, "Yes, sir, fine, sir."
Well, I think so. Hugh Godwin is someone I saw a lot of, a really good journalist. And yep. I saw him a lot when I was over in France. Really nice guy. His take on this, he said, it's a constant juggle between refs chatting away with captains or players and then shutting down discussion. You need a few more clips to decide what's going on here. Ellis Genge, for example, was quickly marched back 10 early in the match.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think.
Genge isn't good at this.
In fairness to Luke Pearce, he often does very well just to shut down discussion and just say that. One of the things that I've definitely seen Luke Pearce do is that's not how I saw it. Like, end of, like, player complaining, saying, oh, he's taking him after the ball, he's taking him in the air, whatever.
You might be right, but that's not how I saw it.
End of, yeah, there's no more conversation to have. And Luke Pearce does that brilliantly.
He could have said, leave me to worry about that. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a couple of ways to influence the ref, and I don't agree with them all. But if they work, they work. So the first one is, like, the Dan Bigger thing. So Dan Bigger is constantly shouting at the opposition, and there's no laws against that. But, you know, he's always shouting at the opposition and bringing it to the ref's attention, but without saying it to the ref, and that is the important part. You know, he'll be like, he's got his hands on the ball, he's got his hands on the ball, he's got his hands on the ball. You can shout that. You can definitely shout that. But you can't say, ref, he's got his hands on the ball.
Yeah. Sir.
Yeah, you can't implore the ref to do something.
It's a tough job as well. We've been in our WhatsApp group, we've a referee at level 5, level 6, says how difficult it is with people. And I had it this morning. I was refereeing a game. We didn't have a society ref, so I stepped up. I'm the referee when there is no ref, because I used to ref.
Yep.
And it's tough. There was one point where it's the parents. There's one point where you've got a lineup set up, and so there's like 20 lads in close proximity, and there's one parent. Ridiculous! What was that? You didn't. That was high. Ridiculous!
High line out.
I just wanted to say something, and I think all I said was thanks for your input.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have even given him that. But what I wanted to say was these 15-year-olds are behaving way better than you. Sort yourself out.
Yeah. I think from my experience, parents are normally the worst, and parents. Create environments for their kids to be worse as well.
Yeah.
If all parents just took the sensible, mature approach and say, the ref's doing their best, it's bloody difficult because you've got a lot of things going on at any given time and they are going to miss things, but they will do their best overall.
Do you understand how society is set up at the moment? That I've seen this at my school. Every parent should be concerned with every little thing that their kids do, regardless. Yeah, and it's not surprising that it boils over into sport. There's no such thing as just letting your child go out and make mistakes and be treated badly on the rugby pitch and dealing it with themselves. You have to be involved.
So Louis's doing his GCSEs this year, this summer, or next, yeah, this in May, June, he'll be doing his exams. And I get, even at, you know, he'll be 16 in January, I get emails every week telling me what homework he has and hasn't done. I've never read a single one of those emails.
I've never read one.
I'm so, like, this son of mine is going to be a flipping adult in 2 years' time. I'm not going to monitor his, the teacher says you've done this, you've still got this assignment. No.
I'm so down with that, Tim. So we get all these emails like, today is, I don't know, International Pumpkin Day or World Book Day or, you know, Anti-Bullying Day or there's some particularly egregious day that they had to go in for. And I was thinking like, right, I'm here with their homework, their right angles and whatnot. I'm like, we've got this back to front. I should be teaching them about International Slavery Day, should I decide to do so, and you teach them about right angles. And once the right angles are absolutely squared away, excuse the pun, you can then teach your pet project, right? But until that time, I'm not doing a single bit of homework. A single bit. It's nuts. The whole thing's nuts. And also, I don't think it makes a shred of difference anyway.
So one game we didn't touch on, the Slater Bowl.
Yeah, nice, lovely photograph again, although sad, but
sad to see Ed already with his I don't know what you call it, the trolley, mobility trolley thing, like his frame thing.
And we've talked about it before, like a figurative superhero of a human being.
Yes.
A couple of years ago on the rugby field.
Yeah, it is remarkable. And still then, like, one of the things that I noticed when we met Doddy Weir in Monaco, Doddy Weir was still just about the biggest bloke in that room.
Yeah.
In a room full of superheroes. And Ed Slater stood there, just about the biggest bloke there, and he is like a superhero, or was like a superhero, and it's heartbreaking to see.
One of a handful of men who can actually play the sport at a very, very high level.
It's ultra elite level.
So jarring.
And I know it makes, it puts everything in perspective, and it doesn't really matter, but he deserved that England cap. He couldn't get any closer to playing for England without playing for England.
Why did he not get it again?
Injury.
He captained England in a non-cap game against, I think it was the Crusaders in 2014, maybe.
He was absolutely going to get it, and then it was an injury. Same happened to Dan Ward-Smith, another great player who should have.
Yeah, Dan Ward-Smith was a great player.
Mm.
Yeah.
The game, it always felt like Leicester were going to win this, even though Leicester's scrum was bad until Dan Cole came on. Gloucester's scrum was good, and Leicester's line-out was a bit shaky. It wasn't its usual self. I know Montoya has just come back into the fold, and there's probably a bit of rust there. But to have limited line-out and little scrum and still to comprehensively win, it shows the importance of having someone like Pollard there. Yes. and some of the ball carriers they've got as well.
So, Santiago...
Carreras,
yes, thank you.
Not Cicino.
He is a fine player. We can all agree he's a fine player.
He is a superb player. But...
I think sometimes the physicality of the game gets to him, and I think he doesn't give up. He never gives up as such, but I think there's just, if he's under a lot of pressure defensively, he's very brave, but eventually it just tells him, and then he misses key tackles.
So
that's what I think.
Yeah, there was a couple on Hassel Collins, particularly for Hassel Collins' first try.
Yeah.
Second, Carreras couldn't really have done anything, but first try, he could have done better.
Don't see it being a reasonable option to play him at fullback unless it's an emergency. So I understand why they hit him on the wing for so long now. I think that's quite clear why they hit him on the wing. Because I always had the feeling in the back of my mind, why would you have a world-class playmaker hidden on the wing? Unless his English was so bad he couldn't tell anyone that he's a world-class fire half. Guys, I'm really good. No, don't believe you're on the wing. Right? And I think it must be this defensive frailty. Because you don't want him in the middle of the park, although I think he'd be more suited to defending in the middle of the park than...
Because you can always tuck in back row.
Yeah, exactly. So you can get help around him. And actually, the size of the wingers nowadays... I mean, I remember the moment that Bath game was lost was not when they scored around him. It was when he had to make a massive tackle on Joe Cocknessinger And he made the tackle, but in the process of doing so, I think that was the game done for him. He's like, yeah. No more of this.
And then it was the Will Muir.
Yeah,
the line Will Muir break all, after that.
Yeah, knees and elbows everywhere. He's just like, no, please, just have your try. And I think the same happened with Hassel Collins, because he is, what, 6'4", maybe, and 100 kilograms?
Yeah, I think he's over 100 kilograms.
He's absolutely
he's
huge.
He's a big boy.
So, yeah, it's a problem for them, because he's too good to leave out.
Yeah.
I'd play him at 10 until, I don't know what to do with him.
But then, to me, they're sticking with Barton. They want to develop Barton, because Barton is there for the long term. Santiago Carreras, at the end of his current deal, will probably be going to France.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's just too talented.
Too famous, too talented. Yeah.
Yeah, too good.
Works well in France.
So they've got to develop Barton.
But the Premiership very much is turning into the NFL in terms of it. You have to win it now. There's no point. Like, if you're going to have a guy like Carreras, but you think you're rebuilding your team, just get rid of him.
He's
going to be a lot of money, unless he's not a lot of
and
money.
And Gloucester are not going to win it now. Yeah, he won't be a lot of money now. His next deal will be a lot of money. Deal will be huge.
Yeah, I'd stop bidding off players. If I thought I wasn't going to win it by about midway through the year, I would do what Newcastle did last year, which is not good for the game, it's not good for the sport, but it's good for my club.
It's good for the bank balance.
Good for the bank balance, and just get rid of the players. Just, you can go. We're not going to win anything.
Well, with no relegation as well.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. There's no point in keeping them.
If you thought, like, I wonder... it's a tricky one to say, because obviously it's still early in the season. I'm sure George Skivington wouldn't be thinking in defeatist terms like that.
He's lost five in a row, though.
But if he could have looked into at this point and go, you're going to be 16 points off the top of the table after seven games, and he had the chance in the summer to clean house and get rid of a bunch of people, whether he might have done a Borthwick from that.
Yeah.
And Gloucester, Gloucester have won two of their seven games, but they were both when... there was a lot of internationals missing for other teams.
Yeah,
I sort of read something today that said Gloucester's last 22 games, they've won five of, which is precisely the same number that Newcastle have won of their last 22 games.
Yeah, they beat Sarah. Oh no, that was Premiership Rugby Cup. Sorry, the Premiership. They won their first game against Harlequins, mm-hmm. and they beat Newcastle. And they've lost every game since.
Well, weirdly, I still actually believe in Gloucester.
I do.
Despite them getting hammered.
I do.
Well, they're not getting hammered, but they're just... I like their back line. their back three is electric. Their centres are pretty handy.
Mm.
I mean, they could do with Hastings back. That would be nice.
Yeah.
And then up front, they're not bad. They're just not bad. And they're not great, though. They've got... a bit of Northampton about them.
Yeah. Well, but they're on a bad trajectory.
They can hit reset a little bit. They've got... Bristol's a good matchup for them. That'll be a good game.
I think they are. I think Bristol will smash them.
and then they travel... This could be a good, like... Right, here we go. Team building weekend. 12 days' time. Saturday, December the 9th. Black Lion away.
Sorry?
Black Lion in
the Challenge Cup. To Tbilisi.
Georgia, yeah.
What?
Wow.
Jesus Christ. Okay, that's Gloucester going to Black Lion.
Gloucester going to Tbilisi to play Black Lion.
Quick stop in Dubai on the way, or on the way back. Maybe make it Kiev. On the way back. Kiev.
That's awesome.
Kiev or Tel Aviv.
That'll be a great time.
Yeah.
And then they got Clermont the following week.
Hmm.
That's a mixed group, you might say.
European competition, we'll have to get our heads on this in a couple of weeks. It's a bit mad, isn't it?
So next week we've got Bristol.
Yeah, Bristol.
That's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, we can jump ahead to next week's fixtures.
Yeah, so
one thing to note on that.
Did we talk about Bristol? No, we didn't even
Bristol
talk about
Saracens. We touched through Owen Farrell.
The only thing I wanted to say is Farrell had eight kicks, missed six of them. And so the win was by 8 points. Saracens, if Farrell had his kicking boots on, would have given Bristol... they scored seven tries.
Yeah.
And Saracens looked ominously good. Jamie George was great. The Maul was brilliant.
So
Saracens' defence a bit porous, though.
Yeah,
conceded four tries.
I'm going to refer you back to BT Sport again today.
TNT Sport.
Oh, of course, TNT Sport. And they did the rugby...
I remember the good days. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Tim, there is a lot of... I'm in a complimentary mood to TNT Sport today, so I'll carry on with the compliments and I won't mention... the downsides from this week. On TNT Sport, it was Craig Doyle, Stuart Hogg, and Tom May. Tom May, because he has... I don't think he's got any other agenda to push other than he's there to talk about rugby. And Stuart Hogg talked about rugby really nicely too. And they were talking about kicking and how Owen Farrell will not be worried about missing six kicks because he's such a product of process. So it's like, okay, yeah, I've missed six, but I trust my process. And you'll just go back to it and slots the next 80% of, you know, 87 out of 100. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really neat point, actually, which is kicking is not as much about the natural talent as people think. It's all about the process.
Mm.
Yeah, Tomo is really, really good today. I was incredibly impressed with him. Mm. Him and Hogg.
With Farrell as well, multiple of those tries. Farrell's try, Lewington's two try, the Billy Vunner Tripolo try.
The first Lewington one was, if it's one I'm thinking of, was ace.
Was the cross kick, and then there was, which was the second one, there was the hands into
the corner.
The corner
I loved.
Yeah, that was
goodness
lovely.
Me.
But they were all in the corners.
Yeah.
Like every try was from the corners. Now, he did miss a penalty from in front, but which never happens. But I think you're right. I think he'll probably look and say, well, those kicks I would normally be expecting to get, say, 40% out of kicks from the corners, I got 25% from kicks from the corners. Like it's well within a couple of standard deviations from where you would anticipate it to be for those difficult kicks.
Yeah, not
therefore not an issue at all.
Not a big story for me. bigger story is Saracens just look ace, like really ace, and also Bristol look terrible. Is that fair?
Bristol's got some lovely runners. Ibatoy for the who scored that try, Kieran Marmion. Try.
Yeah, I like Marmion. I've always liked Marmion.
Yeah.
Now, what has happened to the new Fijian superstar that they've got?
Revovo.
Yeah, where is he?
He came off the bench.
Did he? Was he any good?
He didn't really have a lot of time to... He had their last 10 minutes.
So, now Largo is another Fijian... British Army, but Fijian,
yeah.
Born and raised superstar, who we've hardly seen in the last 2 years.
I've heard that... What's the first guy called again?
Revovo.
Revovo is not playing because he's not acclimatised into the Bristol way of life, the Bristol Bears Brotherhood.
Mm.
But he arrived later than Vakatawa, who obviously must come as a ready-made bear.
Mm.
No, Revovo was with Fiji at the World Cup.
Yeah, so maybe he's right then. Maybe
he's been there a couple of weeks.
That would make more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now Largo was a... He is a talented boy, but he's... We've hardly seen him in the last 2 years. He was one who was... He was named... This is how weird some of the Eddie Jones squads were. He was named as an injured player in one of Eddie Jones's squad, despite never being named in a preceding or following or subsequent squad.
Well, he's obviously dual qualified.
Yes.
Which is... I mean, there is a history of weird call-ups of... dual qualified lads, isn't there? And you all said I was a conspiracy theorist.
I still think you are.
No,
your calculation,
Sam Moore.
Your
Sam
calculation
Moore.
Is 2 + 2 = 18.
It's Sam Moore. someone explain to me Sam Moore.
England captain, whatever he was, under-18s, under-20s, former future superstar that never materialised.
No. Gary Graham. Someone explain that one to me. Gary Graham?
Had a great season for Newcastle.
Tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. The list goes on. Cam Redpath, 12 years old, getting called up.
He's a talented boy.
He is actually one they really missed out on.
Yeah, although I'm still not sure he's ever quite been the same since his knee injury.
I don't know. The thing about Cam Redpath is... the lack of mistakes. And I tell you what, he's got a lovely deft touch every now and again.
He does.
Like, he's not... do you know what? You are right. He hasn't yet had the game when you think, yes, that is the boy. That is the absolute boy.
He is a lovely player, though.
But there's some bits of
his
game.
He's a great player.
Great. He's a really subtle player. Unlike my boy, Max Ajermo, who is outrageously talented in every way possible.
That was one of the things I'm very quickly going back to Sale Bath. I only saw the highlights, but Bath had two really good breaks, both down the right wing, both in the first half. and failed to convert either of them to tries. Now, part of that is great scrambled defence by Sale,
mm-hmm.
but Bath should be, if they score one of those two tries, they win the game. And felt like a missed opportunity for them to go to the Temple of Fun and get 4 points.
Temple of Fun. Beat down Boulevard.
There you go. And Sedgley had a good win away to Cinderford.
I have no idea what happened.
I think there was no lower league games in most
cases.
Well, there
was cup, you see. So on the RVU website, it doesn't update the cup.
Mm. Fixtures next week. And let's not mention my beloved Ulster going up to Glasgow. Although we did have, you might have actually mentioned it before, but Ian Kennedy messaged us about it. One thing to note in this game, because we'll just ignore the whole Ulster performance other than them going 14-0 up. Johnny Matthews, former Sedgley Park Johnny Matthews, who has an astonishing try-scoring record for Glasgow. I think he was the top scorer in the Pro 14 URC last season.
Okay.
He scored two tries this week from the bench. Second was a pushover. The first was one of the best tries I've seen by a hooker from from 40 metres down the wing.
Wow.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. It's worth watching the highlights just for the first Johnny Matthews try.
Has that hooker gone somewhere interesting? So I say that hooker. Do you remember in the... Do you know what? I'll talk to you about this off air. I can't remember the name. I can't remember the club that he's been
to. He'll be here a while.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of guessing about an ex-Sedgley hooker.
That hooker.
Which you don't know. So that hooker went somewhere and he's really good.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after the game.
Yeah, perfect. Let's do that.
Next weekend's fixtures.
Yes.
JB, your beloved Sale, travel to...
Where do they travel to?
Twickenham Stoop.
Oh, they will smash Harlequins. I have no doubt about this.
This feels like a bad matchup for Harlequins, although they clearly rested some of their Type 5 to save themselves for this weekend.
Well, I'll add this as well. When Sale go to the Stoop, it doesn't that often end well.
Mm.
They've had some mighty beatdowns with some really good teams going there. And... Well, Harlequins are good. They are legitimately good. Just because they haven't won the last two games, and one of them was one of the most embarrassing defeats, I'd say, in the last decade of Harlequins. I would go, it is the most embarrassing defeat that club has had in a decade. Just because they were that bad 2 weeks ago doesn't mean they'll be that bad this week. It'll be very close.
I think this will be a close game. Yeah. I think this will be surprisingly close.
If Harlequins start scoring like Harlequins can, Sale are going to find it hard to keep up.
Although... Well, Sale have not scored many points, as I highlighted before. But their defence has also been very, very tight. So that is it. It's, can Harlequins get into their rhythm, or can Sale shut them down long enough to kind of back it, cement those doubts that Quins will inevitably have after losing the last two games?
Do you know, I love Quins and the fight that they have on the extremities of the field. So I love Liner. I think Liner fights like nobody else to get the ball back. Do you know who he reminds me of? Kind of like a Jack Noll.
Mm.
Like he's so busy and so physical.
So is Murley.
And Murley does the same thing.
Yeah.
So you think of these boys as finishers, but actually what they're doing is able to win your battles on a one-on-one right out wide. And I love that. And you combine that with Will Evans, who is an absolute menace of the highest order.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you've got a real problem.
And Esther Hazen.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
How do you see it going? So you're going for Quins.
Yeah, one word. I'm going to say Quins to right the wrongs. You've got to say Sale, surely.
I think Quins will win this.
And Cocker? Form would say Sale, but...
I'm going to go Quins at home.
All going Quins.
Yeah.
Saturday, we have got...
What do we know?
2:00 o'clocks. Bath hosting Exeter. Give me Bath.
Bath.
Yeah, Bath. I just don't think... I loved what Exeter are trying to do. I think, actually, Bath are more fluid. Yeah, and Finn Russell's getting better and better and better.
Yeah, he's the more he gets embedded in that team and the more people learn how
he plays.
There's
just not many teams, are there, which you could assemble where Townsend and Skinner are going to get the better of Spencer and Finn Russell. Like, which other players would you need to put around those players in order for Harvey Skinner?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Stu Townsend to win. It's...
Or Ken, whichever's starting.
Yeah, whichever the combination you go with, you're going to need a enormous contribution from everyone else. I don't think they've got enough talent in the rest of the X's team to make up for those halfbacks.
So Bath. Yeah. All round Bath. Bristol, Gloucester.
Yeah, I think maybe Bristol.
I think probably Bristol.
But both are having disappointing seasons. Languishing in 8th and 9th.
By the way, anyone seen or heard anything from AJ McGinty of late?
Nope.
No, it's just been sheedy.
400,000 is a lot of money not to play someone.
Presumably he's unavailable due to injury.
I'd assume so, because just no word.
I love the fact that when we're closing in on 2 hours of a podcast and we're going, right, let's quickly just get through the final fixtures. JB manages to find a way. I'm going to stop that rabbit hole. If you know where AJ McGinty is, let us know.
Well, I am just checking the... Here we go.
He's like one of the Premiership's most highly paid players.
So Bristol, when they do announce a team, as they did on Friday lunchtime, midday, they always give you unavailable. And the list of unavailable players for Bristol this week included... one, AJ McGinty, alongside lots of others.
Unavailable because he's just...
Spending his £400,000.
Yeah, he's too busy on Black Friday sales with his cash.
Good lad, AJ. You enjoy it.
By the way, Black Friday, what a con that is. I reckon if you just track the price...
Hang on, how am I not allowed to talk about rugby players and you're allowed to talk about...
Fine, I won't go there.
No.
Don't go there. But if you track the price of anything you're actually interested in for the last few weeks, seeing the price go up and up and up just so they can drop it back to where it was in it already.
See. Interesting.
Or putting, like... In fact, it's another rant. I'll do it for another time. I found out the codes at TK Maxx, which means you should look for the codes as to what you should and shouldn't buy.
Oh, wow. Ooh. That is good.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Interesting.
I thought it was your phone.
Something, was that Rudy upstairs?
Yes, absolutely.
Next fixture is 5:30 on Saturday.
So we're all going for Bristol. So we're all going for 3 home wins.
I think I want to go for Gloucester just because I really want them to beat Bristol.
Okay. But you're not going for Sale? You do really
want... Because I don't think Sale will win.
Okay.
Bath is the only one of the teams so far without like a sort of a character on their badge, I'm just looking.
Good.
Yeah. Them in Northampton are the only ones.
Good. Keep it that way.
And Saracens have just got a... They don't have a character, do they?
Crest.
They've got the star and the moon, is that? I don't know. Is that meant to be a blade? Yeah. Is that a blade and a star? I don't know.
Anyway.
I can't believe that no one's come for them for cultural appropriation.
Don't you worry about it. It's coming. Only a matter of time.
Anyway. Next game, 5:30 on Saturday. Saracens host Northampton Saints.
Oh, it's a belter. Saracens will win.
Saracens,
yeah.
On Sunday, we have Tigers hosting Falcons.
Not interested.
Home win. So
I'm interested in watching Tigers.
I'm not interested in watching Tigers against Newcastle.
I'd still watch Tigers.
I'm saying all home wins.
Yeah, Alex Codling's got his work out, hasn't he? He's just not got the squad or the investment or the money or the fan base or anything you need for a professional rugby team. And I do sort of enjoy watching them toil, see what these lads can do because they're there to play. But yeah, I'm with you, Tim. It's hard to stay interested.
Right. Maybe, again, it all depends on whether you can get the kids down early enough, Phil. But potentially, right, or it could just be we could either watch the game or we could just have this going on through the podcast. The game next week, Sunday night in the top 14, is Stade Français against Toulouse. Maybe they're playing. Maybe it's the JV
Whoever wins
ball.
That game, I will support.
There you go.
We could try and record early and then... We record 6 till 8.
Well, I don't know what time I land.
Oh, yeah. So are you willing to say that? They are playing for your...
Yeah, go for it.
For your support.
Go for it.
Because they're the two contenders, aren't they?
Yeah, I think... I prefer Toulouse, I think.
Well, you know, Toulouse might win.
Please. Yeah, I don't know. It does feel a bit boring. I know. Would I rather rock around wearing Stade Français stuff or... Like the ties and the cufflinks and whatnot, or...
I do own a Toulouse tie.
You do, actually. It's a real nice piece of kit.
It's a lovely tie, yeah.
Can I have that then?
No, absolutely not.
Why? I support them. You don't.
I support Bordeaux.
Well, what if I buy you a Bordeaux tie?
Would you get me a Bordeaux tie of a comparable
if
quality?
If Stade Rennais, you're going to go, oh no, that's not really, that doesn't count.
I'll have a look at their tie selection.
It's going to be slick as, look at that.
Yeah, that is cool.
Look at that shirt.
Yep, the thing is, Stade Rennais are a product of multiple owners and sort of, you know, fads and fashions and, you know, look at this pink thing. Whereas the aristocratic Toulouse is just, it's a culturally bred institution. It's a very different beast. There are no fads. There are no fashions. There's just good old-fashioned hard rugby by brilliant players.
Okay, so you're going back on that, that next weekend is the JB Bowl.
Well, I'll have to really consider it. It's a big decision, Tim. You don't just jump into bed with the first rugby team you find. Oh, by the way, we've had a great weekend, a great week of emails. I'm not going to go into every one of them, but it seems that a lot of people liked our content on Monday, and I've never seen a reaction like it, to be fair. So thank you all for emailing in. If you want to email any more, let us know. Contact
@gmail.com. And you can support the podcast if you appreciate, you want to help keep the lights on and get some extra additional spicy content from time to time.
I completely forgot to tell you, Tim, and the listeners.
I'll just say, go to patreon.com/eggchasers.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I did this weekend?
CrossFit.
I came third in an RX comp.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, I mean, it was
podium finish.
Podium finish. It was a very big comp. I think we had 6 or 7 teams. But yeah, first RX comp, because I keep getting injured before them. And I didn't lift so well, but third overall. We did awful on the first one.
So RX, for the uninitiated, is basically like the...
It's Latin for prescribed, is it not?
Yeah, prescribed, but it's the open division. You could be open division where you're up against anyone, so like it could be real top athletes. And then you have scaled competitions for intermediate and beginners.
Yeah, so we had it was RX comp, first WOD we did not do, workout we did not do so well, and then the rest of the gym came to support. So my friend Victoria, Laura, and a few others showed up, and at that point, because of course there's people from the box that know you can't not work hard, you've got to work extra hard then. So we smashed the one on the rower. I think we won that.
What was the workout?
You hold a 80 kilogram barbell at the top of the lift, and you have to row, and the other partner has to row 135 calories. So you can swap whenever you want, but you cannot row unless that barbell is in the air.
So you have to keep going. You can row when the barbell's in the air until the 135 calories are done as a pair. But the difficult there, the time is the changeover time.
Yeah, so you can do whatever. If you can do 135 calories in one go, and you can hold that bar for that long.
Sorry, what lift is it?
It's an 80 kilogram deadlift, but you have to hold at the top of the deadlift.
Not deadlift, overhead.
Nope.
Deadlift. Just holding the bar.
You've got to hold the bar. Say,
can you do the cross hand grip? Alternate grip?
The only thing you want to do is like squat into it.
That'd be all right.
Well,
what's the calorie rule? 35.
135.
Which is about, I'd say that's about...
I can do 35.
Five minutes. Yeah. 5-6 minutes.
So I can do 35 calories in 1 minute.
Yeah but then you can't do that for five consecutive...
No, I cannot.
Four consecutive minutes.
Yeah, so... You've got to work out...
So that's an interesting one.
It's a really good one, yeah.
So how long could you hold, and when you're fatigued as well, how long
did
you hold
80
kg?
5 minutes 18, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I started with 35 calories in the first minute, then we swapped and got 25 calories in the second minute.
Yeah.
And then we went to 20 calories.
Yeah, because after you've been rowing, your grip is fatigued more.
Yeah. Take your shoes off for the rower, because you can get in and out of that rower so quick. And that is that when you've got more changeovers. So we smashed that one. And then we came second in the lifting, because my arm is still weak and I can only pathetically get 110 over my head, which is just embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Just on that, have you tried doing the hanging for 2 minutes?
No, this is a Peter Attia thing, isn't it?
It's a what, sorry?
Peter Attia thing. Yeah. I'm sure I can do it.
I don't know from Peter Attia, but I've just done it in the past. I've tried it.
Yeah,
can you do it?
Yeah, I can do it.
We did it as
painful.
A warm up in a workout a while ago. It is hard.
I'm sure if I absolutely had to do it, I could do it. I'm certain I could do it, actually. But it's not easy.
Yeah, it's really not easy.
I would say, it's not easy at all. And one of the things you do is, the hook grip.
Yeah.
So hold your thumb.
There are some calculations that some science... Peter Attia, this sciencey kind of guy, has come up with for longevity. One of them is grip strength, and one of them is like, you must be able to hang for 2 minutes. But the other one's like, carry your own body weight for 5 minutes in a farmer's walk or something ridiculous. Like, that's difficult.
Is he just picking things that correlate with longevity, long-term health?
Don't know. I'll send you the clip, but he's got all these different things, like what you should be able to do. And it's not things you expect, like squat. It's farmers carry your own weight or something like that. Hang for 2 minutes. There's a few others. Have you seen this clip, Tim?
No.
Yeah, there's a few other weird ones.
I've heard him talk about the hanging just being really good for, like, and like grip strength being it's correlation rather than causation. He's not saying if you have a great grip strength you'll be good, but that people that have good longevity have a good grip strength.
Yeah, so like if you're thinking of smoking 60 a day but you can do it whilst hanging for 2 minutes, it's not going to help you out much. No.
But I can start to see like that whole Tai Chi thing that old people do. I know it looks like it. Well, that's not doing any good. But like, some of these little shit, some of these stuff that's been around for hundreds of years, probably know a thing or two, don't they?
So funny enough, my partner in this, my workout partner, a guy called Joe, his mum is a grandmaster Tai Chi expert, which I find hilarious. Yeah. In fact, I was walking down the
black belt Tai Chi.
Yeah. Good luck defending yourself. I was walking down the Mersey, because we are in Chorlton and it is, bohemian hell some days. In fact, bohemian hell. And we had someone being chased by the police run through my garden on Wednesday.
Really?
Yeah, they abandoned their car outside, then jumped over my hedge. And I'm sitting literally where I am now, looking out that window. I saw a set of male legs jump over my hedge. So, walking down the Mersey and some woman is doing Tai Chi, just completely socially unaware. I thought, what a privileged position to be in, to really not care at all that people are watching you and just enjoying your Tai Chi.
Oh, yeah. No, you're talking.
Yeah. Now, you've got to reach a certain age, haven't you? You've got to be a certain status and age in life to really not care what other people think.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com and let the boys end.
Beauty.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.